kind of open up these feedback loops again so that when you see, for instance, like, oh, my rocks are going away too fast, well, cut back on your oxygenated water. I'd like to see that problem. But, but now I want to get a little bit more opinionated, as if I wasn't already, and go into some general insights. And these are some things that I've just made up and or picked up, and I find them to resonate very well. So I'd like to share them with you. And they're all sort of related to natural farming or soil foundation. And this is, right here, I would say this is probably one of the keys to natural farming is starting with soil foundation. That if I walk out in my field and I say, oh, there's a bunch of grasshoppers eating this stuff, and I go out there and I start like going after the grasshoppers and looking at it at the leaf or the grasshopper level, or, you know, that if I don't start with the soil foundation, if my plants aren't living in a good, solid structure, you know, there's no point adding a third story onto something that has no support underneath it. And so start with soil foundation, do it right, do the, and majority, I'd say like 99% of your problems will disappear because your weeds will now be beneficial. You'll be like, oh, I'm loving these ground covers. Your animals that are there eating things will be liking the ground cover more than your plants, so they'll start to, you know, leave your plants alone. Everything starts with the soil foundation. The immune system, everything's more resilient. You have less nutrient imbalance because there's biochar where they're able to hold the structure in there and not have these crazy peaks of the energy field oscillating all crazy. They're able to smooth it out and keep it nice. And so starting with the soil foundation, definitely crucial. When I'm building my soil foundation, I tend to incorporate a lot of wood. Last couple times, or woody type material, stuff that's going to stick around. The more you can put that stuff in there, the more it encourages the fungal activity, because wood has more lignin, which tends to attract more fungal things to break it down. Other things can't eat it until a fungus has unlocked it from the lignin. And so wood really helps to build a soil foundation, like as a mulch on the top or whatever you do. I mean, don't go crazy nuts with this idea either, though. I always like this one, too. 4% of the plant's composition comes from the soil, which means 96% of this wood that you see here came out of the air, sunlight, and water combining, and 4% of earth minerals to make this wood. So everything you see here, only 4% of it came from the ground. So when you look at your plants, and you're like, oh no, my plants aren't doing good, I need to add this mineral. It's only 4%, so stop and ask yourself, is it really this 4% which is causing this skew, or is there something else in the soil foundation that I can do to perhaps get this system moving a little better? And so it kind of like a little weight off my shoulders knowing only 4% of it's earth minerals and having to do with balances and imbalances. And it's very important, and that 4% makes a lot of difference on how it's assembled. But it is, again, only 4%. And I made this number up right here completely. But I would say 99% of it, the immune system is determined by the soil. That if you're trying to get an immune system from other means, it's not the immune system comes from the soil. Even with us humans, our health is really dependent on our environment. You know, if you're sleeping in a thing with a bunch of pollutants around you and you don't have like a good soil type of environment, you'll get sick way easier than if you're living in like a nice clean carbon area. And so those were the things that I kind of made up, but I want to talk a little bit about things that I got from Gil here. And And I like his ideas. He has pretty basic, simple things, but where, and I'll read this directly out there, but where there's food, there will be life. Like, this is a given maxim of living on planet Earth type of thing, that if you are violating this, you are so out of balance that I have no idea how you did that, because there's pretty much always bacteria no matter what you do. And where there's low stress, there'll be good life. That when things are not necessarily easy, but not stressful, things will be good. So, and if things get too easy, it can bring up stress too, which is an interesting idea, but there'll be good life where there's low stress. And when the stress rises, the good life becomes the food. And this is the whole trick, and the whole part of it is that it's all about, like I was talking about this energy field, but you can almost relate that energy field to a stress field. You can say, oh, when there's a big battery, we can tolerate a lot of stress because we got a lot of biochar in there, so we can take a lot of stress. Then the good life will be like, have a chance to deal with it. But if they're right on the edge and the stress rises and they run out of fermented plant juice, or they're like, oh no, we got to eat these IMOs. And so they're hungry, they got to eat. Life is just this kind of perpetual cycle of the healthy one making it better for healthier ones to come out until they get too stressed. And so it's all about mitigating the stress. So in the soil foundation, again, you think of the energy field, you think, how much is this going to stress my field when you do certain interactions? It's a really good way to look at it. And I also kind of like this idea. This is a little bit more mystical, but it's talking like you want to grow a plant, right? Well, there's 100 different ways to grow that plant. And it kind of, the journey that you take to grow that plant, so like the methods I take and use to get that plant to the end result, it matters. But it doesn't matter so much that I'm going to change the destination. That if I do things a little bit differently here, I'm not going to grow all of a sudden like I plant a banana and it's going to turn into a strawberry plant. Like, I'm still going to get the banana, but the quality of getting that banana may be better or worse. And I kind of like this idea here that on soil foundation, that there's a bunch of different ways to do it. Like, you want to remove the grass, or you want to, I don't know what you want to do, but there's a bunch of different ways to do it. You can get a tractor, you can get your shovel, but at the end of the day, you got the thing, and it's the quality of it that you, if you feel good about it and you manage to lower the stress in yourself or your environment, then I would say you did it right. But that's up to each individual to find for that. And his one of his main points was, a lot of times he would say, what do you think? But really what he's trying to say is, what do you feel you know is correct, I believe. And like I said, again, if you know you want to get to that end destination, like you want to get good soil foundation, as long as you keep that as your focus, you will get it. But having at least, or I guess having one way to do it is better than having no way at all. I don't know, this slide was controversial. I was considering not including it. So, this guy, Leon Risden, he's an author of a book called The Carbon Connection. I'm reading The Carbon Cycle right now. Two great books. They're both out of print, a little bit hard to get, but well worth it. But understanding carbon is fundamental to farming. And if you've heard the way I've been talking tonight, I've really been talking kind of from this perspective. I've been using a lot of these ideas in here as they really, really add to my natural farming knowledge and really help me to see things in the light that makes sense to me. And that, you hear NPK, but where was carbon? Really not mentioned here. And the carbon, like I said, it's this full potential food. And when I'm talking about the full potential of that plant reaching it, the plants have the nutrition, but it's about having an environment so they can mitigate the amount of toxins that they're passing along. to really give advance, to rise to advanced life forms. That you can eat food that's not full potential food, but you'll never get to your full advancement of your life form if you're not eating the food that's clean and that has the right nutrients and components. And carbon is a huge, huge, huge part of that. How do you, most air filters, carbon filters, most water filters, carbon filters, that carbon is the filter and the cleaner of the earth, and that it has to be good carbon. And I really like his definition of a toxin, and this is the one I've been using when I talk about toxins this evening. This is what I was implying here, is that it's anything present in an environment in quantities greater to make life flourish or facilitate the production of life, if I said it correct. And so that means if you got this great bag of nutrients and you throw it out in too much quantity, that life only needed 2%, but you put 90%, that even though it's great, good stuff, it's a toxin now. And so your environment, there's two modes. It's either in production mode or it's in protection mode. Production, protection. And when you dump a toxin out there, it has, if it was in production mode, it has to go into protection mode to get that down to a non-toxic level before it can then reemerge back into production level. And so any toxins you put out there to get that back to a productive level, it actually burns up your good carbon when you add too many toxins. And it lowers your overall battery. This battery and the energy that I was talking about, I mean, I've kind of like danced around it this evening, but it's really, this is a big part of it that, that's going to help keep the energy field strong. And I mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again, that, you know, when people go to do soil foundation, I read this great book. It's on Google Books. It's free. It's called Bread from Stones. It's written in like 1800-something. Right when Justus von Liebig, which is the guy who invented chemical fertilizer, came out, this guy wrote this book, and he was like, no, don't do it. But the basic idea is that plants are around a lot longer than animals, and so when you think of how do I feed this plant, you should probably go to the rocks or the minerals and things that have been around longer than thinking, oh, should I go and put this manure on there? And the concept that I understand it as is that basically your plant has, it needs to fill this gap with a nutrient. And that if you add manure, it's like taking a bunch of little pieces and putting them in that gap. And you fill the gap and the plant grows and you know, it's a new day. But if you took rock minerals and you had good, healthy rock mineral into that section, it would be one piece that would fit in there. It would be a nice bridge that would be really strong. And if you think about a lot of little pieces and you punch it versus one big, strong, rigid piece and you punch it, the one with one piece is always going to be stronger. I mean, you look up here at this beam across here and it's one solid piece. They didn't use a bunch of little pieces to build this structure. And this is the same idea on building plants, that when you get rock minerals, it's like a nice long beam. And when you use manure minerals, it's like you took a bunch of 2x4s and glued them together up there. Maybe it worked. But these are just based off observations that he's had, that basically where there's like lots of glacier mineral water, you have like really strong mountainous people. But where you have people that are just recycling manures back onto their fields, they're kind of like lazy, like they don't want to do much, and they don't look as healthy as these other people. That's kind of the idea here. And he basically says, like, chemical fertilizer and manure, because they're in such quantities, they're always toxins when you introduce them to the soil, via my previous definition of a toxin being anything that's in more abundance. And you never see heaps of manure. Like, you never see a manure lagoon in nature. That's only since man has been confining animals in high capacity loss that we've seen these lagoons of, and they're not good. You know, you typically, if an animal goes in the bushes, it's a small event. Like there's one pile there, and it's like nature, it can handle that because there's not like a whole heap of it. And so it can process it, and you naturally have some pretty nasty microbes in your gut, which are specifically designed to break down once you've released them as waste. And that's why you get E. coli and nasty things. It's because they're in your bowels, and they're there to break it down. When you get huge concentrations that are very unnatural, that's when E. coli can get out of hand. And so it has a place, but there. And you'll notice this is something the dude, Polyface Farms, anyone know his name? Joe Salatin was talking about. He's like, I always move my animals. He moves them every day. Why? Because grazers move on to mitigate their exposure to pasture, or to pathogens, worms, and disease. That if you keep an animal confined, it knows it's supposed to move on. It knows it's not supposed to be eating grass fertilized by its own waste. It knows herd animals keep moving constantly, always moving, because they're trying to get away from their waste. They're not just sitting there thinking, oh man, look at these vegetables I'm going to grow. I'm going to, you know, just sit right here. They're like, no, they're getting out of there. And so this is my prodding to get it, you know, manure is not the best idea. So if you are going to use manure, though, processing it with worms or compost before you introduce it to your soil, especially your growing area, it works. Worms are designed to go through that manure. They have special microorganisms in their gut that only live in their gut that is specifically designed to deal with that type of waste. So processing it with like red wiggler type worms is a great way to turn manure into gold. And Elaine Ingram came, talked to us. I got to sit and listen. And I had a lot of insights from that talk, but I wanted to share these few with you here. Basically, the beneficial, when I say beneficial microorganisms, they tend to be aerobic. There's some anaerobes that are useful, and they all have a use. Like, but typically, the anaerobes are used to clean up the dead aerobic ones. So beneficial ones, the ones you want to be breeding, the ones you want to be propagating in your microbes, the ones you want to be propagating in your soil foundation are aerobic microbes. So that means they need oxygen or access to oxygen always. If you cut that off, they start producing alcohol. Alcohol invites bad guys. So I had this point here that anaerobes actually produce alcohol. When you create a bunch of alcohol, guess what shows up? A bunch of roofians. They all start causing havoc. So the key is to keep the aerobic and keep the alcohol away. The aerobic microbes actually create vinegars, which, like alcohols, will water-solubilize minerals, but the vinegars do it in a way that the pH is in harmony with light, that it's in a range that light can accept, which I'm not exactly sure what those numbers are. I didn't listen to that closely. That the vinegars are good water-solubilizing things, but they typically come from aerobic microbes. And she really stressed that the bacteria to fungus ratio is one of the fundamentals. She's primarily working with compost, which I feel that Master Cho's Bokashi is a superior tool to working with the compost the way she does. But that in her research and in her things, that primarily what she's concerned about is the biology of what's in there, and particularly the ratio of biology of fungus to bacteria. That she'll go with a slide, look at each one, count them in a certain area, and figure out, okay, what is living here and what's making this environment good. And it really determines what naturally wants to grow. If you ever notice, you round up some area, almost always those same type of weeds come in. You can tell where it's been Roundup because it's those same kind of nasty weeds that grow there. And this would go to the same thing, that if you go to a healthy soil, you're going to look and you're going to see these same types of cover crops there. You're going to see these healthy, typically nitrogen fixing and or getting bigger to shrub type of plants starting to emerge. And you're going to be able to tell naturally what this ratio is by just looking at the plants that are growing. And it just has to do, again, it goes to the energy field that certain plants won't even sprout. That there are 40,000 ohia seeds per square inch in Hawaii, but they don't, why aren't there ohias everywhere? It's because the energy field isn't congruent yet because of these fields in addition to other components. And I thought this is one of the main things that kind of took, like Master Cho, he comes at this, you know, his mentors are God, the Bible, and his masters. And so he's coming at this from a very spiritual sense. And Elaine's coming at this from a very scientific sense. And she mentioned this point that in the root zone of your plant, like imagine this is a root in the soil, that right around the root zone, the plant simulates baking bread because it feeds that bread to those microbes, and the microbes are like, thanks for the bread, and they deliver whatever nutrient the plant wanted. So they're going out into the soil and grabbing calcium and bringing it to the plant, and they're baking them bread. It's just like how we like bread and donuts and stuff like that. They do too. And that this is why I believe that using the Bokashi, using Milrun to make your IMO4 is one of the best things. And I think this is why Master Cho is so successful with using either the rice brand that they use in Korea or the wheat brand that they're using here. And it's because it is just like you're baking bread. And why not grow them in exactly what they want? You're trying to cultivate these types that like the bread, that are the beneficial, the aerobic. Why not cultivate them in that same thing? And it really has to do with that, the Milrun and sugars and yeast and bread. Delicious. And also like your idea of that, it's really the microbes' ability to just-in-time water-solubilize things. That, like I said, it's only 4% are earth minerals, but they're everywhere and they're all there all the time. But it's really that it can be water-solubilized when you need it. That if there's a bunch of something available today and I don't need it today, it doesn't do the plant much good because it can't store them in the same way. I mean, it's all stored in the biochar. The biochar is the storage device. So the plant can't take a bunch right now. It has to stay in the biochar. But it's about getting it out of the biochar at the right time. And this is really why the microbes are so effective in the soil foundation, because they're able to just in time say, oh, I need this much now, and it's like, boom, it's delivered. And they're like, thanks for the bread. I really like that idea. They're right by the roots, and they deliver it right when it's needed, and it's just in time. And it's when you live in this natural cycle that things are there, and they are able to be water-solubilized at the right time. So I just want to show you a little bit. These are now kind of pictures and example type things. Sorry, the color is a little bit weird on this projector, but I couldn't figure out how to get a higher contrast. But I just wanted to show you that started with that, and then we ended. It's not done yet, but it's like this. And this was actually a couple months ago, because now it's shrinking back and it's harvestable to call. But this was using the soil foundation that I've just been talking about here. And this is what happened in 6 months. So we went from a lot that had been herbicided. I don't know what they've done to that lot it's just been sitting there for a long time. And in that little bit of time, we were able to get this recovery where the plants are not only growing, they're also reaching closer to their higher potential. That these are full leaves, that these makua, I mean, the corms are pretty good size for growing there, especially in the density that I planted them. They're really growing pretty nice. And so... I did a lot in the beginning, basically built the soil foundation, and then one of the big keys to this garden and it's is that it has I don't know if you can't see it in these photos, but there's a lot of coconut chips, and the coconut chips helped really keep the IMO.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Keep the IMO growing and give it a boost to the soil foundation. So using some type of mulch to cover it, I don't know where I was going to go with that. I did a bunch in the beginning, but then towards the end, I really haven't done anything for like the last 2 or 3 months besides go prune the pigeon pea. And if you know, on this side, well, there's a bunch of pigeon pea planted that I continually go and chop and drop and continually add more organic matter to the system. But that with the soil foundation starting from the beginning, that it's basically self-sufficient. It's creating all of its own fertilizer from there that I'm just, like I said, it's an energy field, so if you continually just let it do its thing, you kind of have to add a little energy in to get energy out. And that's what the pigeon pea and that is for. The majority is coming, 96% is coming out of the air. And I wanted to show you what, this is what like commercial situation in Korea look like. The photo on the left is the number one natural farmer in Korea. And if you look at his field, he has this wonderful lush cover crop underneath, stands up, does its thing. He's done the soil foundation. This is probably 5 or 6 years running from this photo from when he's done it. But just to show you that once you get it in an orchard situation, it becomes self-sufficient. That really going through doing your soil foundation once through an orchard, then once your energy level has been risen to the, you know, to where it can support more life, you plant the beneficial cover crop, it really does its thing and takes off. And this guy does next to nothing now in terms of adding fertility. It's just, it's naturally occurring. And then I wanted to show you, and he follows Master Cho to the T, and he just went with it. These guys here, I don't think they're following Master Cho to the T because they're using plastic along their soils, which is something that he would probably encourage you not to do. But this is just to show you that when you go to do it, like I said on Gil's deal, it's like, you know, you want to grow strawberries. It's like, you know, your journey to get there. Do you put a nice cover crop in or do you put plastic? And, you know, what are you trying to get out? What quality of journey do you want to have to getting your strawberries at the end? And these guys here are interested in making money, and they're making a lot of it. And what they do is they have these long rows that they do soil foundation. They also run water, like irrigation under this plastic with more soil foundation ingredients in there. But you can easily cover it with plastic. But he did the soil foundation first, then he's doing his farming method on top of it. That's my idea. And I just wanted to show you a few more examples. But again, my majority of guys, again, are going with the plastic underneath to grow it because it's, look at the production they're getting and they don't have any issues yet. They did the soil foundation, so they still have amazingly good crops coming out. But soil foundation doesn't just mean, you know, it's a pretty open definition. And again here, I wanted to just show you this. This is an apple orchard, just to kind of bring contrast to that persimmon orchard that we saw, where the guy was following it to the T. You know, he had that nice beneficial cover and everything was kind of self-sufficient. Whereas these guys are more trying to hack the method. They got some mylar down. They don't necessarily have the world's best cover under their crops. It's kind of just patchy grass. And they may be able to do different types of soil foundation. But that's what I saw in terms of implementation there. So I'm pretty much done with my talk tonight. Again, we went over the recipe, told you about the method, told you about a little bit of theory, had a little too many things in there. All the components, we enumerated them all, went through them, and I gave you some insights and examples. And this last example I want to show you here is, this is work my dad did, which this is mowed grass on either side, and then a soil foundation done here, where the preps have been put in, and then it was covered by Aglericidia, which is a really fast-growing legume tree. And after the soil foundation's been done in this row, just chop and drop on top, and this bed, I forget what it's growing now, but it's doing really well. And so that's just an example of us doing it here. And so if you want, tomorrow, like I said, make that 4 o'clock. I put 4:30 some places and 4 other places. But 4 o'clock in front of the Crest Building. If you want more information, there's Elaine Ingram's talk and a few other things on naturalfarminghawaii.net. Spending some time with nature is always a great way. Just see what you can see and learn. I mean, look at the bugs crawling around and see how they're, what they're doing. And are there any questions? Carol?
Have you tried to find the brown
What, have I tried it? Yes. I mean, it's 1/4 inch minus. You're at the advantage of not completely powdered biochar is that the structures, the roots will grow in there and they'll hold nutrients better. I think it's just like when I was talking about the microbes and deploying the IMO4, that you want to leave them kind of chunked. A very similar concept to that, that if you leave it slightly chunked, they can build slightly more complex structures within the biochar versus more of just a powder.
I think it also doesn't break down
like
the chaff, because it's eating small granules that make
the biochar doesn't break down. It'll be in your soil forever unless it washes away.
And also putting wood in the substrate. And what is there any type of wood? Or the different kinds of trees that are better or worse for this purpose?
Harder wood's going to last longer. Softer wood will
do it or not. Do you want it to break down?
I guess the way I would answer this is that if the wood that's closest to you is probably the best wood, that the less you have to transport this stuff, the better. So the more you can grow certain things that you know you want, like I grow, like that, for instance, on this slide here, where we're growing the tree that is a Glyrocidia tree, we're growing it in this row, and we're dropping it here. And the closer the wood is, the better. Some trees grow faster than others, but I would say that any and all of it's probably good. Harder stuff's going to last longer, but the closer, the better.
I've got a question about press. Isn't it true, or is it true that the water for a lot of fruit trees, they don't set much bloom or set much fruit unless they have a little stress of some kind?
Well, like if you're going to girdle a lychee, that's different than jeopardizing its immune system by mitigating the soil and causing stress that way. So I'm talking about the stress of the soil and that relating to the energy field in the soil, that by denying a tree, like cutting into its Cambrian layer to stop it, like it's a different type of stress. So like stress by pruning or girdling is different than soil stress. And specifically here I'm talking about soil stress. Yes, sir.
Do you apply the IMO4
ferment it or previous to spraying, or you make it just before you spray it on
your soil? Dynamo should be completely fermented and cooled, and then you mix it with the biochar, and at that point it doesn't matter. Like, I just had a bucket of IMO, and then I mixed in my biochar, and then I stirred it, and then I put it on the field right at that time. So there's no activation during that time when you mix biochar with the IMO. They may move into the biochar a little bit, but it's not going to change very much. Absolutely. If you do this in a pot, you can do the same soil treatment solution in your pot. It'll work. It won't be as like if you do it in nature with no boundaries on the plant, you're gonna get more interaction with more of the system. But within your, it'll create like a little microcosm in your system that it will activate.
I have a gravity flow water filter.
So if I just pull
that water and put it in a blender, it
would go
like this. Would that water be
enough? Yeah. That's probably the most creative way I've heard to make oxygenated water. I like that. The classic, and the way I've been doing it recently is just a biodynamic method of you stir it 9 times clockwise, 9 times counterclockwise, and just continually reverse that. And I just did soil foundation on my little garden that I'm starting, and I just had, I had 3 buckets of water, and I would go stir one, stir the next, and then I'd go counterclockwise, stir them all. And I stirred them all for about 10 minutes. And you'll notice that about 10 to 15 minutes of stirring water, which may seem like crazy, which is what I thought about biodynamics when I first heard of it, but the properties of the water change. You'll physically see the water start to behave differently. And just by stirring the water, and just by changing the energy field, it'll behave differently. So I like that because I just like to see the emergence as I'm stirring it. It will, I'm not stir crazy, but but I like to think, like, aquarium aerator, I think of, like, guppies. I like to think of hornets. I like to think of, like, oxygenating water. If you use a small little air bubbler with a small air stone, like, you're just not, like, it's not as effective. It almost does. And because you can't get the particle size very small, when you're actually stirring the water, it folds on top of itself, and you'll hear it sucking the air in, and it gurgles, and it actually, like, pulls and draws air into it. As well as carbon and nitrogen and a bunch of other things that are in the air get drawn in when you do it via that method. If you just have a bubbler, the air is going up, and then it's popping out, and it's so it depends. There are compost tea aerators out there that are like $500 or so that will do quite a nice job. But then again, you're thinking of this versus like a little bit of bubbles.
And the
So to do the soil foundation, typically it's done once and then it's no-till after that. So you can, in any time you want to, like in an orchard situation, do it once. And if the following year you feel that you're not up to where you want to be, do it again. Following year you feel you're not, do it again. But as soon as you feel that you're at where you're at and you're happy, you don't need to continually do this. This is sort of, one of the great things about natural farming is that it builds on itself year after year. So the work you've done this year, you can build on next year, as opposed to other farming where it's like you're kind of starting over at square one each time. This is built. So the more you build and the more great carbon and the more microorganisms and the more diversity and the more organic matter that system's naturally creating, the more you can take your hands off. But that's up to each individual, and it depends on how much you disturb your soil when you're harvesting things. Like, for instance, if you're digging up sweet potatoes, you're going to dig up all your soil, and you may want to do the soil foundation after that 4 weeks before you plant your next crop. But if you're doing something like lettuce, where you're just cutting the tops and you're leaving the roots in the ground and you're not disturbing the bed, then maybe you can sow your next soil foundation, or without going through the soil foundation step. There are other ways to just directly feed your plant. Any more questions? Well, I'd like to thank you all for sitting here so patiently. I always have fun talking. So thank you. You want the presentation?
Yeah.
Okay, I put it on. It's right there.
Let me turn this off. I'll put it on the internet too.